Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com and Ben Fred Fridays. Our weekly visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and a weekly contributor as well to KTRS Radio. Lots to get into. We'll talk about the wrap-up of the Cardinals winter warm-up and the Cardinals caravan. Marcell Ozuna, the comments made by Chris Bryant, Hennessy Cabrera, Ryan Helsley, Jose Martinez, all that with the Cardinals. We'll get into a little bit with the St. Louis Blues and a ton into the National Football League, the awful call in New Orleans, and Stan Kroenke and the St. Louis Rams and what it might mean for PSL holders and the future also of relocation in the National Football League. This is presented by the National Children's Cancer Society, Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill, Here Saloon for Men, Design Air Heating and Cooling, Ryan Kelly, the Home Loan Expert, and by Schnucks. We're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Still just a handful of tickets remain. You could do it right now. Call them or sign up. The 7th Annual Evening with the Cardinals is tomorrow at Union Station, presented by the National Children's Cancer Society. The featured guests will be Cardinals Hall of Famers Jim Edmonds and Chris Carpenter. Also, special VIP reception featuring the president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak. To be a sponsor or to get your tickets, head to thenccs.org. Thenccs.org. The event has raised over $1.3 million for families battling childhood cancer. Event coming up tomorrow. Coming up next, Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch.
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. If you're even considering buying a home this year, get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. Don't be the only offer on the table without a pre-approval letter from thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
The big games are happening at your house and you're entertaining, but are you ready for the big game? Do you have the right food, drinks, and snacks? All you have to do is head to Schnucks for your game day essentials. They have everything to make your party great all in one stop. Take a look at the Schnucks Party Guide called Simply Entertaining. Download a copy at schnucks.com/entertaining guide. It has party trays, prepared foods, decorated desserts, and so much more. So when you're entertaining for the big game, all you have to do is think Schnucks.
As always, a chance on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, contributor to KTRS Radio, as we come to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. And Ben, the winter warm-up, the Cardinals caravan, it has come and gone, and we're just a few weeks away from the opening of spring training around Major League Baseball. Let's get into your takeaways from the winter warm-up, where you hear from Bill DeWitt and Michael Gersh and John Mozeliak in the front office and the players. Number one, Marcell Ozuna. Is he healthy? Is he not? What's your takeaway with the Cardinals left fielder?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest news story out of the event. The fun story was the Cardinals and Cubs clash. I know we'll hit on that, but newsworthy in terms of how this team looks in the standings for next season. There's not a bigger X factor than Marcell Ozuna, right? If he can be the player that he was when the Cardinals traded for him, then this is a World Series contending team. If he's the guy they had last season and the power's not there, then the Cardinals could have two pretty big question marks in corner outfield spots. The Cardinals were not down on Ozuna, but they did say, look, you know, we haven't heard a lot from him. We're not real sure how things are going. John Mozeliak was going down to the Dominican Republic for a graduation ceremony at one of the academies the Cardinals have started there, so he's going to have a chance to visit them in person. Basically, the vibe was this. The offseason, I guess, theme was accountability, right? And it included check-ins with players and Cardinals coaches and staff going all over the country to see players. And the one guy they didn't hear much or see much at all was Marcell Ozuna. He's recovering from the off-season shoulder injury that required surgery, and I think they would have liked to have him in front of Cardinals doctors. I think they would have liked to have him doing their prescribed recovery and rehab program. He decided to go his own way with that, and that's his decision. The Cardinals can't make a player do something that they don't want to do during the off-season. There are rules to what you can and can't do. Ideally, you would have a player who wants to participate, I think, in the team's rehab and recovery program. But Ozuna did his own thing. The Cardinals said, look, we're not really sure what's going on. We hope he's getting after it. He says he is. We have to take him at his word. And fittingly, the next day, Ozuna puts out some videos on Instagram of him working out and letting people know that, hey, whoever says I'm not working is should come watch this. And he put up a series of videos that have been shown that he is working out. It still doesn't mean he's working out under the Cardinals' watchful eye. So I think anxious is the right word to describe this until they see him at spring training. He is supposed to get there, I believe, the first week of spring training. And the hope is that he's there ready to hit the ground rolling, because if that shoulder's not ready to go, then that's going to be probably a sour point to start spring.
What do you make of Chris Bryant, Yadier Molina, and the Cardinals and the Cubs going back and forth? What do you think?
It's fun, man. And that's how I view it. I think that's how most of the Cardinals players viewed it. But it's not fun to Yadier Molina. And this will come as no surprise to anyone who has followed Yadier Molina's career. Dan, you know, he doesn't take things lightly, especially when he perceives them as a lack of respect, whether that's Tony Lovello or whether it's Brandon Phillips, whoever Yadi feels like isn't showing the proper amount of respect to him and the Cardinals, they're going to hear from him about it. And the thing that's interesting is that the Cardinals, to a man, rallied behind Yadi and said, look, anything that motivates number four is good for us. And Yadi, you know, he wasn't making it sound like there's going to be a physical fight, but he did say, look, we're going to remember this. And I think it's bigger than that. And maybe you agree with me here, Dan, maybe not, but I'm always kind of looking for the bigger picture. And to me, this bigger picture is this. Yadier Molina is tired of seeing the Cardinals' name tossed around like a team that can be shrugged off and disrespected, especially in Chicago. But he also, I think, understands how it got to this point. And he's very much interested in the penultimate year of his contract of trying to reestablish that order of the National League Central that he came to think was the way the world was supposed to work. And the last few years have been a toppling of that of sorts. I think he's tired of the Cardinals being pushed around and walked over, and he feels like they have the team now that can end that. He loves the Goldschmidt edition. He loves Mike Schilt. I mean, he gushes about Mike Schilt like he has not gushed since Tony La Russa was around. I mean, comparing Mike Schilt to Tony La Russa, I think Yadi really likes the team, and I think he's very eager to show Chicago that the Cardinals are not a team that's to be brushed aside, especially by a guy like Ryan Dempster, who Yadi probably had to Google to remember who he was.
Yeah, I think that's the way I look at it. I think he thinks that this is a good team that the Cardinals have. Probably could improve maybe in a couple of areas, maybe as the season goes along, but right now is currently constructed. Good team. He's prideful, as we've seen on many instances, and he's not going to be talked down to or wants to be does not want to be pushed around. So, yeah, I'm in agreement with you, and that's the way that he handles his business. I, like you, have heard a lot about Genesis Cabrera, the lefty that the Cardinals picked up in a deal, and maybe this is the lefty that could break camp if he has a good spring, or somebody they bring up as the season goes along. And also, I'll tell you, on the Cardinals caravan, right-hander, and I've been saying this, as you know, Ben, since the end of last season, right-hander Ryan Helsley is a guy that I think is going to be impactful at some point this season, maybe even out of camp, out of the Cardinals' bullpen. Primarily has been a starter, dealt with arm injuries a year ago. Not many heard about what was happening with that arm. He's completely healthy. He's ready to go. Cardinals protected him, put him on the 40-man. He didn't go anywhere. I thought he was awesome last spring. Those are two guys that I think, pitching-wise, can make an impact this year for the St. Louis Cardinals. Give me your take on those two prospects heading into spring training.
Yeah, good things all around from everybody who's watched them, and they're on the 40-man for a reason. The Cardinals were afraid of losing them. Helsley was named by Mozeliak last year as a guy who could be a difference maker out of the bullpen in the majors in 18, and he named two guys last year. He named Hicks. We saw how that turned out. And Helsley got to Memphis. Then the shoulder started barking, and they shut him down and told him to rest and wouldn't let him pitch anymore. So he's healthy. He'll head to spring ready to make that jump. And when Alex Reyes is describing your fastball as electric, then that's a pretty good endorsement for right-hander Ryan Helsley. He's a strong fella. He looks like a guy who can come in and power pitch. You're super smooth, efficient to the plate, really kind of has that fastball that gets on a hitter quick out of his hand. Cabrera, and get this, you talk about endorsements. Subby Clapp is calling him the left-handed Carlos Martinez, and he's not the only one in the Cardinals organization who's saying that. He's pronouncing it Genesis, so it's going to take some getting used to for me. So it's Genesis Cabrera. He is the guy who came over in the Tommy Pham trade and had been a starter and, you know, had really intriguing stuff as a lefty. And last year they moved him to the bullpen when they sent him to Memphis for the Redbirds postseason run. And it was like a different pitcher. Now, a lot of guys get that velocity jump when they go to the bullpen. He got, you know, three or four miles per hour and just had a different kind of persona. He was lights out for the Redbirds through their, you know, championship run. They won the AAA championship. And I think that really opened the Cardinals' eyes. And then he went over to the Dominican Winter League, and he was just a monster over there. He, you know, tons of strikeouts, a tiny ERA, and just pitched in these games that, if you don't know much about the Dominican Winter League, they're big games. I mean, big crowds, loud, kind of a major league type environment. And he didn't blink. He had his best performance of any, you know, any shortened season that he's had in his career. So I think the Cardinals are very open to the idea of him coming in and being some sort of a left-handed piece out of the bullpen, especially when beyond Andrew Miller, there are a lot of question marks there. I know Brett Cecil's in really good shape. Apparently, he's trimmed a lot of his body weight down entering spring training. They do have Chasen Shreve back. Tyler Webb is there, and they signed Andrew Miller, so they've got some decent left-handed options, some better than others. But I think Cabrera is a guy who could sneak in there and really kind of cement his role sooner rather than later.
I know it's cliche. Sometimes the best moves are the ones you don't make. Maybe Cabrera is a guy that could emerge out of the pen. You mentioned Cecil. They've got Shreve. They've got Miller. And that leads me to the fact that they did not trade Jose Martinez. And I've been in the camp that they shouldn't have done that anyway. He's a fallback for Dexter Fowler. And he's a guy that can hit off the bench. You don't know about Ozuna. There's a lot of things that, to me, fall in the camp of keeping Jose Martinez. Again, Ben, I don't know where you stand on this, but I'm a big Jose Martinez fan, and I'm glad he's here.
Oh, man, I wrote it at winter meeting. Let's talk about trading him, and you better get something good for him. And I do think they made the right decision by tabling that. And it's really dramatic how the tone has shifted regarding Jose. And some of this is just business, right? The Cardinals wanted to see what they could get. It didn't necessarily mean they wanted to trade him. But they were definitely dangling him, shopping him hard at winter meetings. And they couldn't find, I guess, the relief combination that they liked in order to move him. And especially that talk changed after they signed Andrew Miller. I think it's a great decision to keep him. I think it's probably a decision that will not really be fully understood until they get to that point in the season inevitably where they're going to need him and he comes through, because that's all he has done since he broke into the major leagues with the Cardinals. He has led this team in average since he made his major league debut. He has been, I think, top three in on-base percentage and slugging percentage. He's going to be a better defender now with Paul Goldschmidt in front of him and Harrison Bader to the side of him. And now you can also, you know, depending on what Ozuna looks like, and I'm not trying to be too alarmist here, but if he's slow to go, then you can use him in left field. You also have Tyler O'Neill there. But it was interesting to me at winter warm-up to get a sense from Mike Schilt and John Mozeliak and how they see Jose Martinez being used. Mo said he could see him playing in every game, you know, being the first bat off the bench when he's not starting. Schilt said that, look, every 4 days you're going to get a lefty. Jose Martinez, since he made his Cardinals debut, has had the best OPS against lefties of any Cardinal period. So it sounded like Schilt is open to the idea of starting him against left-handed starters, which means that I would assume, you know, that means Dexter Fowler is going to sit, because Fowler was horrific last year against left-handed pitching. So maybe that's the way that Jose Martinez finds some more regular at-bats. So that's going to be fascinating to watch that play out, because you've got a guy who's very, very good against left-handed pitching and a guy who wasn't very good last year. So how do they massage that in there? And if Fowler continues to struggle, I think more and more starts will go toward Jose.
Let's go to the Blues. Now a little break for them. Doug Armstrong says that Coach Berube will stay on as the Blues coach through the remainder of the season. Do you think that's the right move?
I guess I'm kind of vanilla about it. I mean, I don't know that you're going to – it's more important to make the hire that you need to make after the season, in my eyes. And I know the Blues are within shot of a wild card. So they have improved their standing under Craig Berube. So let him keep going. I mean, give him the rest of the season to show what this team can do and consider it an audition for the job. I'm good with that. Unless Coach Q is ready to walk through the door, You know, he's probably still off skiing or doing whatever he does, not going to Bears tailgates anymore because I think that's over. But maybe he's going to the Super Bowl. I mean, you really don't want to rush a hire like this. So I'm okay with that. As far as the Blues, I don't know. You know, I have a hard time getting fired up about this. They're sixth in the division. They've got like a 30% chance of making the postseason. They can't seem to get any steady sort of traction. Every time we start to think they're starting to stack it together a little bit, the bottom kind of drops out, and it's just kind of the team they are. But they've got a shot. They're not mathematically eliminated, and some of the teams in front of them in the wild card standings are looking pretty rough. So we'll see what they do, but they're going to need to play a lot more consistently than they have at any point this season in order to crawl out this hole, because it gets harder and harder to get in the longer you go without a spot in hand.
Okay, now let's get into what will be, I'm sure, touchy subject for some. I'm going to start with what happened on the field. Saints, Rams, awful call by the NFL for the non-pass interference in the call with the Rams and the Saints. Let's just play it out. Saints would have been able to probably run the clock down, kick a field goal. More than likely, it's good. They head to the Super Bowl. Instead, Rams are able to get it back, force overtime. And they go to the Super Bowl, which will be played in about 9 days. Your thoughts on that? And right now, one of the big stories in sports, and one of the biggest controversies for a team that's headed to a Super Bowl.
I mean, I view it two ways. I really do feel bad for lifelong Rams fans here in St. Louis. It's the worst Super Bowl imaginable. I mean, the Rams losing to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, the St. Louis Rams losing to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, was kind of the start of the Patriots dynasty. It's a sour memory because you found out later that the Patriots were filming walkthroughs, and there are players who, like Marshall Faulk, who swear that, you know, that was a difference in that game, that they knew the plays and that they, you know, the Patriots had that to the fact. We know the Patriots are noted cheaters. I'm not using that as terms of being inflammatory. I mean, it's been proven time and time again that they're willing to bend the rules to the point of breaking them in order to have an advantage. So that's the team that you have to root for if you don't want to see the Rams win. You have some of the worst rules in NFL. You have the overtime, which is the worst overtime in professional sports. And you have this replay that doesn't allow you to correct an obvious error, an error so egregious. The player, the defensive back who made the what should have been a defensive pass interference, is admitting after the game that the call was blown. I mean, usually you don't see that until like the 30 for 30 comes out years and years later. I mean, it's not right after the game where the guy goes, oh yeah, there's no way I should have not been flagged there. I mean, it's just, it really is kind of it's the Super Bowl the NFL deserves in terms of, you know, the way these teams got there, what these teams represent. You know, there's really not I hate to say it like this, but there's really not a team that's even enjoyable to see win. I mean, the Patriots are you know, so crass and so in your face with their success, but also with cheating to get there. And then the Rams are, you know, they just reek of Stan Kroenke. It's going to be tough to watch. I think a lot of people here probably won't watch. And I've been trying to tell folks, because I know St. Louis is going to be a big story this week, and I've already been contacted. There's a guy, a very good writer from the LA Times, who's in town to write a story about what St. Louis is, what's it like here now that this Super Bowl is going on. And I know Dan Wetzel has been here to write a column, kind of, you know, talking to the jaded St. Louis fan about this Super Bowl. And anyone who's reached out to me, I've tried to tell them, like, yeah, it's a fair story to write, but please understand why people here are so mad. It's not that they lost their team as much as it is how. And it's not, you know, when you take a team as St. Louis did, you can't hold a forever grudge if that team gets taken back. It was that a guy from here led the team out, lying about it all the way, and then burning and torching a city in his footsteps. Also, while the league set up fake hurdle after fake hurdle and told us that if we jumped over them, we'd have a chance of keeping it. It wasn't it was the how. And I tried to express that to folks. I don't know if they're hearing me. But all we can do is point it out, and I think that's why it's so much more important to focus and to really, I mean, serious, like, root on these lawsuits that are taking place. whether it's the PSL that has been settled, these folks are going to get some of their money back, as they should, or whether it's the big relocation lawsuit that's going to try to get some answers as to why the NFL treats its relocation guidelines like the Ten Commandments until it's time to go against them. And then they pretend their crown written on the back of a little kid's notebook that's a washable crown, and you just wipe them off. I mean, something has to be true, and they can't play it both ways. And I'm thankful that there are some people who are actually trying to get some answers in this. The only way that you can, without being lied to your face, the only way you can get that is to get them under oath.
I'm proud to announce a new sponsor for ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, and that's Design Air Heating and Cooling. You know, a few weeks ago, I was having an issue with my furnace, and I made a connection with Seth Goldkamp, who runs Design Air Heating and Cooling. He sent a technician over to my house. Not only did the technician arrive at my house, but so did Seth. They did a tune-up on my furnace. They got it running properly, but they also found a glitch in the system that is now saving me money on my monthly statement. That's all because of Design Air Heating and Cooling. They did that for me and my family. They can do that for you. They're a fourth-generation family-run company. They've been in business for over 100 years because they take care of their customers. The number one train dealer in the Midwest. It's hard to stop a train. Find out more at designairservice.com. Thanks to Seth Goldkamp and Design Air Heating and Cooling.
The PSL stuff is what? $24 million going back to PSL holders. Also, the Rams in this deal have agreed to pay up to at least $7.4 million in attorney fees and expenses. So a little over $30 million that they'll have to pay out. I agree. I assume that you would agree it's, you know, probably a little dent for Stan Kroenke, but
sure.
Hey, it's a dent.
And this is the only stuff, Dan, that he cares about. So when people say it's not that big of a deal, it's pocket money to him. Okay, it is, but all this man cares about is greed, is money, is winning lawsuits. So when he loses, it really does bother him. And if you read the story, Jason Cole had an interesting story out recently, that this is really chapping the Rams, that they're still tied up in this stuff. And that they're not winning it. They feel like they can't get a fair trial here. Go figure. And it really, I think the tone of this was kind of set with that Reggie Bush lawsuit. The Rams thought they were going to laugh that out of the courtroom. Reggie Bush got paid because the dome was not safe. And that injury that he suffered there helped contribute to the end of his career. Now, he was kind of washed up when it happened. But I'm telling you, you know, people are out for blood here. And I think it's the NFL's MO to drag things out, to try to settle if they feel like they can't win. And the lawyers who are in charge of this relocation lawsuit, Bob Litz and company, they do not want to settle. They do not want to take any money to go away. They want to put these guys on the stand under oath and get answers. And if they continue with that, and it might not be easy because Stan Kroenke will try to bleed them dry, and he will try to we'll try to convince them to never let this get to court. But if they can keep this up and they can see it through to the end, I think it would be very, very fascinating and really maybe make a difference in how this is handled in the future.
What do you think with that, to follow up from your sources or what you're hearing and what you can maybe explain on this, a timetable with this and maybe some of the players in this that would be called to testify under oath in this situation?
Well, I don't know a timeline. I mean, and it really is. It's a delay, delay, delay. That's how Stan Kroenke handles personal matters that get into court, and that's how the NFL handles things. They really just try to bleed you out. So timetable, I'm not sure. I mean, you got to think that Dimoff would be involved in this. I mean, he was kind of thrust forward as the mouthpiece of the ownership. I mean, Stan had a couple damning quotes early on, and then it was almost as if he realized he shouldn't be the one talking about this. So it was Dimoff who came out and said, look, there is no secret plan. There is no secret plan. And then immediately after the Rams get their team, during the flight to Los Angeles, there's Stan Kroenke gushing to the Los Angeles Times about how this has been years in the making. And it was just almost as if they forgot that this might come up one day in court. And I think all you can hope for is that it does. I have no ill will toward the Rams players. I mean, Roger Saffold and Todd Gurley and, you know, those guys, good for them. I mean, they played on some bad teams. So this is a great opportunity for them. But, and even most of the people have turned over. I mean, Sean McVay had nothing to do with this. But it is fascinating to me, truly fascinating, how different this team looks under a coach that's competent compared to a coach that, A, was the losingest coach in football, B was asked directly when he was interviewing for the job, not about what it takes to build a winning team or to go to a Super Bowl, but what it's like to relocate a team. And C, a coach who has not been touched by the league since he's been fired. That's how outdated and ineffective Jeff Fisher was as a coach. He hasn't gotten a job, not as a defensive coordinator, not as an assistant, not as anything, since the league left him behind. And I think that's really telling what how bad the leadership was for the Rams toward the end of their time here in St. Louis.
Pretty amazing. Our friend Randy Carricker, as we know, very passionate about the Rams. We've talked about just how passionate the fan base was here, and that is been, you know, I think misrepresented among the national media. But he sent this over to me, and I've tried to give this to friends of mine that do the NFL, and here it is. The Rams sold out every home game from their arrival in 1995 until an 0-8 start in 2007. That included 9 complete seasons at or below 500. There were 19 times the Rams and the St. Louis Cardinals had played at home on the same day. Each time, the Rams outdrew the Cardinals. Even, according to the Rams media guide, for Game 5 of the 2013 World Series. The only time they didn't play head-to-head was on October 15, 2006, when the Rams played before 65,592 against Seattle during the day, and the Cardinals had 46,600 for the NLCS Game 4 against the Mets at night. The Rams' final home game of 2011, played at noon on New Year's Day of 2012, drew 55,990 fans, according to the Rams media guide, for a team that was 2-13 coming in and 15-64 over the previous 5 seasons. Pretty amazing numbers that Randy came up with. And as we know, they had one of the worst stretches in football history, and at one point it was the worst stretch in football history, and yet the fans continue to come out. And I say that to you, Ben, because I would hope, as the national media, as they continue to call you and your colleagues, I hope you can continue to impress upon them to dig on not what fans are feeling here, but what happened. What happened? Why? And Stan Kroenke, it's not that the fans are bad here and they don't support football and, oh my goodness, it's 2 teams left. Well, it's got to be the fans. They must not support football. Couldn't be further from the truth. It's that this man didn't want to be here and did everything in his power to get it out of here. I wish the national narrative understood what Dave Peacock and Blitz did to get public funding through, and the money and the millions of dollars raised and the power lines that were moved and the track and the North Riverfront that was cleared and ready to go, the naming rights of a stadium ready to go with no guidelines or help from the Rams. It was incredible. And to me, one of the stories that's what I'm saying. And one of the stories that I think that has not been written or talked about is, if you're going to, and for future teams and cities, is that the NFL turned away public money. They turned away and turned their back away from a city that supported it and public funding. And if they did it here, they set a precedent. And that precedent has been set. That's number one. And number two, for some that have said, get over it, and I know there's been prominent people that have said that, you know, they said, well, if you're a Rams fan and you know, you're passionate about football, well, just get over it. Well, my response to that is that when you say that, it's one thing to get over it and say your feelings got hurt, wah, take your ball and go home. However, it has set the city back, for instance, on MLS and trying to get things done with a lease, let's say, or with other things that are sports related in which you try to get help from government entities, or what it's done to the region for other things that needed that you need help with sports. So, you know, just to say, well, get over it. No, the repercussions of what happened here are far reaching, and it's very tough just to say, get over it. So those are my opinions on a quick synopsis on that situation.
Well, the the get over it stuff maybe applies to feelings like screaming at a TV, but it shouldn't apply to actually digging through what the ramifications of this were and what could still happen and what could be gained back before it's all said and done. I mean, you can't, whether you're for public funding for sports ventures or against it, no one on either side of the argument can argue that the Rams, the way this played out, drastically changed the discussion here in St. Louis. And one of the biggest things that I think is most frustrating about this whole thing is that, A, the misleading by the league. You know, the league said, look, we have to follow our relocation guidelines, so there's a way to fight for your team. And if you guys fight, then the relocation guidelines will side with a city trying to keep its team more than an owner who just wants to move. So, you know, people showed up to these town halls and made these big scenes. And there was an honest effort to try to create a viable plan for a new stadium that, as you said, included public funding. And then money was put into that plan. I mean, millions of dollars were spent coming up with the plan before even the public asked the money that would have been given if the plan, you know, would have been accepted by the team. And then you have owners who really did think, I think, about your point, Dan, where they said, look, if this is how we treat a market that's fighting to keep its team, then what's going to happen to us when we need a new stadium or when we need, you know, when we want to work out some sort of new agreement with the city? Because if I'm an alderman or a mayor in any other city of a similar size market, and my NFL team comes to me and says, we want to this, this, and this, I'm going to look directly back at them and say, how did you vote on the way the Rams thing shook down? Because, you know, that city tried to keep its team and it got kicked in the face for it. So what does your league really care about, us or making the most amount of money? If Europe decides today that it wants a team, how do I know that you're not going to pick up and leave no matter what we do? I really do think there were owners who thought about that. And I think that's why the initial vote went the way it did. And then that's when you open up the whole another door of corruption and deceit. You have Jerry Jones, you know, slimes his way to the front of the room, closes the door and tell everyone, no, we're going to do this a different way. Let's do secret ballots and I'll grease enough palms and make enough promises that we're going to get this to go the way I want it to go. And pretty much every owner rolled over. And that to me shows you exactly what you need to know about the people running these teams. They can all have their values and they can all say they care about their fans. But when the door shuts and the slimiest in the room walks to the front, then they all show their true colors. So that's, for me, is how I feel when I watch NFL. And I'm not kidding, you know, I have watched less football this year, less professional football than ever before. I see some highlights here and there. You can't avoid it on Twitter, obviously. And I got, you know, there were times when I would see what the Chiefs were up to because they had a compelling, crazy quarterback. But it is hard for me now to watch the game and pretend like I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. The way they treat players, the way they overlook, you know, domestic violence, the paid patriotism stuff toward the troops, all of it makes my blood boil now more than ever before. I feel like because we've seen the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, and I do think a lot of people feel that way. So it'll be interesting to see what the ratings are in St. Louis. I'm not going to bash anybody who watches it. I don't care whether you watch it or not, but it is hard for me to pretend to know what we know and what we learned firsthand.
No doubt. Well put. We will connect again next Friday, and I'm sure I may see you Saturday down at Chaffetz Arena. Big game for SLU. So, Ben, as always, great catching up. Good stuff. And next Friday, we'll do it again.
Sounds good, man. Talk soon.